Seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago, but all will be okay. I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Wake and Make podcast, your favorite podcast that's centered around the maker community. Today, I'm really excited about our guest. Dave Smith is with us. We're going to have an awesome conversation. There's a lot of cool topics for today. But first, let's introduce Dave. Dave, how are you doing, my friend?
Great. How are you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing good. It's a little cloudy outside. It's nice and cool. Usually this time in Southern California, I'm already a baked potato. So I'm enjoying the cool weather. It's nice. It's super, super nice.
Right on. Yeah, it's probably mid-50s here. I'm in Minnesota, and it's bright and sunny today. I'll take that. But
Minnesota.
I come in two colors. I'm either butt white or brick red. Those are the two colors I come in.
There you go, man. I'm lucky. I tan up pretty good. So I think I'm part Native American, and Southern California, we're in the sun a lot. So it works really good. So first and foremost, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It means a lot to me. I've been kind of reaching out to people, also getting recommendations from my friends, the listeners of the podcast who they would like to hear come on, and you were recommended. So I'm really grateful. And you know, before the podcast, I always do a little deep dive or a little research and talk to the guest that are going to come on. And you had mentioned that you're a bit of an introvert, and I'm assuming doing something like this can be a little bit nerve-wracking. How has being a introvert helped you or harmed you in your leather crafting journey thus far?
Oh man, that's a great question. So how has it helped me? It's really given me a place to go and do something, like feel like I have a sense of accomplishment while I'm recharging my batteries as an introvert. So I can go into my space, I can go into my head, and I can come out of it with a sense of pride and accomplishment that, hey, while I was doing nothing, right, for my mental health, I was getting something done. So that's been huge. And the hardest piece of it has really been feeling like putting myself out there and saying, Hey world, here I am. Here's what I can do. Here's a piece of me, come get it. And that's been the hardest part. You know, what's worthy to put on social media? How much of myself do I share? I mean, if you go to I've got a website, but if you go to that, there's no about me page. Not yet. I get challenged about it quite a bit from folks that I know that are into small business and entrepreneurship and stuff like that. And it's just, I have such a hard time talking about me or trying to whittle down the what is it about me that makes me that you would be interested in if you came to looking for something made out of leather.
Sure. So. Because people aren't just buying your product, they're buying you, and you're an abundance of character, but it's hard. And this is something I can relate to you, which I'm getting better at, is being able to talk about your products, talk about yourself, without the fear of coming off arrogant. That's the problem that I consistently have. I want to maintain being humble because I feel like being humble is a great virtue to have as a human being. But there's a point where it goes too far, where if someone gives you a compliment and you're unable to take that compliment, then you also come off arrogant. So you're constantly fighting this battle. And the same way what you're saying as far as like what you started off with, like recharging your batteries, I'm very much an extrovert. So I love talking. I love I'll spend 20 minutes at the meat counter at the grocery store just talking to the butcher about absolutely nothing, or a wave at the neighbor turns into a half an hour conversation about nothing. Like, but I recharge my batteries by not talking to anybody. And I even told my wife yesterday, I'm like, hey, I'm recording 3 podcasts tomorrow, so I'm not going to have a whole lot of energy to like, all of my talking is done by the time I'm done doing this. And she's actually an introvert, so she gets that, and she recharges her batteries by being around people. And it's just, and that's why what I do is so great, because I can come out here into my studio and be completely by myself, and that's recharging my batteries. I don't have to talk to anyone.
Yeah, I feel you on that one. Like, I have a certain number of words that I use, that I can use in a day before I'm just done. Like, and often, especially pre-COVID, my day job was getting up in front of people, leading people, like large amounts of people, and just being on all day long for 8, 10, 12 hours a day. And then when I came home, it was just like, I need to figure out how to recharge my batteries between the time I leave work and the time I go home. Because when I walk through the door, I'm a husband, I'm a dad, you know, like all of the things. And I can't, it became a big problem.
Sure.
In my house, where there were days where I was just wiped out, and I walked in like a storm cloud, and it was, I couldn't get refilled quick enough to be totally present and available for my family. And that was like, that realization changed a lot of things within the last, let's call it 18, 24 months. Like it was just like there was a decision point, and then I went down a different path.
something that has worked for me and my wife recently, we don't have kids yet, but something that's worked for us, because we're both very much like that. She's a teacher. When she gets home, there's just days that she's like, and so what we do is we've come up with a word or phrase, and it's ever evolving, but basically we'll be like, oh, I'm turtling right now, meaning like we just pull into our shell. It's that term alone means I'm not upset with you. It comes off that I'm upset with you, but it has nothing to do with you. I'm just, my battery is drained for today. Or at least for the next hour or 2 hours, I just need to not talk. And we find we have two different, she likes watching TV, mindless television, to kind of whatever, just not think for a little bit. Your brain's fried after teaching elementary school kids, and she does like double shifts, and it's wild. She's working like crazy. And there's times after a podcast, it's like, it's doing a string of podcasts in one day, where I'm like, I'm not upset with you at all. Or dealing with just life, being out in public and dealing with the people that are out in public, that you're just like, oh man, like I just need a break, and it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. And having that understanding and self-awareness, you know, and each of you having that self-awareness to be able to say, you know, to say that, or having, you know, having the, where I used to struggle the most was my wife would try to tell me that, hey, you know, what's, it seems like something's up. It seems like you're turned off. And I would take offense to that, when in reality it was, I wasn't mad at her. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't upset in any real way. I was just drained. But then I got upset, or I got triggered, because she noticed it. And I was like, wait a second, you know, she's trying to help me, not hurt me. So that's, you know, that's when you just kind of got to take a minute and figure, okay, what do I need to do? Right.
Well, there's two things I think that happened in that situation. When nothing's necessarily wrong with the person that's asking you what's wrong, but they keep asking you what's wrong, that they then become what's wrong. Does that make sense? Where it's like, what's wrong?
For
what's
sure.
Wrong? Nothing. And then eventually it's like, you're what's wrong. Like, leave me
alone. I'm getting annoyed at the scenario right now.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, because that's the person you love the most in the whole world, that the people that you can't express it to all day at work because of work, you know, you're able to be comfortable with your partner to almost, I'm sure you don't do this, but we all do this, right? Like take it out on them to a certain degree. And you have to like, I think the best thing is that you're able to see it. That's going to save a lot of heartache in your relationship, that you're able to kind of be like, oh yeah, like this is something that we need to talk about and address, and it only benefits you and your family.
And I'm not going to be above saying, you know, I did take it out on them. Like it was, you know, it would come out in nonverbal ways. It would come out sometimes in verbal ways, but it was never like, I don't think my kids have ever heard me yell. Right. But just the way of being, the way you carry yourself when you're in those scenarios, when you're just overwhelmed, stressed, you know, anxious, whatever. It comes off as not who you, or in my scenario, I came off as somebody the opposite of who I needed to be in that moment for my family.
Right. Something that's worked for me too. I mean, I'm at home all day and, you know, working from home, but when my wife comes in, I can pretty quickly see if she's had a harder day compared to an easier day by, we wear our emotions on our sleeves. I can see it when she gets out of the car. If she comes in and she has that kind of like, it's been a rough day, I just say hello, give her a kiss, and then wait for her to bring up what had happened. But sometimes detaching work life from home life takes a half an hour to an hour that saves you the rest of the night of grief. So I highly recommend anyone listening to this, if you have a partner that, and you guys don't get home at the same time, just let them have a half an hour when they get home to take their shoes off. If they need to make a cocktail or whatever it is that can transfer them from work life to home life. That's why even with me, when I, you know, Southern California is notorious for nothing being close to itself and having horrible traffic. So a normal commute, it's not unrare for it to be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours each way. So sometimes having that hour or 2 hours drive home from work can kind of settle you, unless you freak out in traffic like I do also. So all of the above.
Yep. Yeah.
You mind if I ask a little bit more specifically how being an introvert has affected your ability to be a small business owner? Like, I know you mentioned about the About You page, but are you able to feel comfortable on, say, Instagram, doing like an Instagram live, like going on and just putting it in, you know, a camera in the corner and working and answering questions as they come in and engaging with your fan base?
That would terrify me, to be honest. Like, and the funny thing is, you say that and that's my response, but then I, thinking back to like, what have I been Google searching last week? Ways to mount my camera above my workspace, ways, you know, like all the shit that allows for that kind of interaction, right? Because, well, and here's another thing, handing out a freaking business card. Like walking up to somebody and starting that conversation terrifies me. And I did it. Like I did it in this last, I did it, was it, what day is today? Monday? I did it on Saturday. Like random dude, I was in the locker room at the gym and I saw this guy with a dob kit that I thought was cool. I was like, hey, do you mind if I see the inside of your dob kit? That's how I opened up the question, or like opened up the conversation. This guy looked at me. I'm like, oh, I'm a leather worker. I'm trying to figure some stuff out. Can I see the inside? I just want to see how it's lined and all this other stuff. And he just kind of looked at me. He's like, yeah, I've been through a bunch of these because I travel a lot. He opens it up and all this other stuff. And then I handed him a card and it started this weird conversation.
Right. I can just picture it. Two dudes in a gym at the,
in our towels still. Like, yeah, it was totally random, right?
Can I see inside of your dob kit? And the guy's like,
yeah.
What kind of weird like pickup line is that? Things have changed.
It was like I'm awkward when it comes to social interaction, and that's like the epitome of it, right? Like, yeah. And then just like it's so funny because like the locker, I've actually had probably four engagements in a locker room around leather work because somebody's seen something. Like I, the first thing that I ever designed for myself was this Leatherman pancake sheath that also holds a beard comb, because I was like, I'm always carrying my Leatherman. I'm always carrying a beard comb. How do I not carry two things? So I made this thing that's a slip sheet for both of them, and I carry it on my belt. And people see that thing and they're just like, holy shit, where'd you get that? And I was like, well, I made it. And then it starts this weird conversation.
Your beard comb, you know, obviously I'm a fan of yours. So looking at your beard comb, I thought that was the most awesome thing, because it's shaped like a mustache, right?
And oh, yeah, the stash, yeah.
Yeah, and then you can just slide your comb in there. Me, so I call it my, like, anxiety soother. I have a beard or mustache, whatever, facial hair comb. And when I'm watching TV or whatever, I'm just, like, brushing out my beard. But even, there's no need for it. It's just soothing. And, like, I just think that is, I think it's so clever. And it's so cool. I love it.
Thanks. And the so, you know, shout out to Beard Brand, right? That's the product I use for my beard. And they put out these beard combs, like new designs of beard combs every couple, 3 months. And that's the stash. It actually came from, I'm part of one of their forums. Like they have a forum for called the Alliance for people who really dig them. And that's kind of how Sternbeard blew up, was through this forum. Like I was making stuff, I was making masks, and I was just kind of feeling my way through things. And randomly one day somebody asked a question, how do you keep pocket lint out of your beard comb? And this random dude said, hey, Dave's a leather worker. Why don't you ask him to make you a sheet? So he did. And I was like, I never even thought of that. Like what, you know, and that's where I started with the full Monty and the show pony. And then the stash came because somebody was like, hey, could you make one that's shaped like a handlebar mustache? And I was like,
you're like, thanks for being a genius for me. Awesome. That's.
Can I? Yeah, I can do anything. I can figure it out. And that's, you know, do I know how? No, but I can do it.
Something like that, and this is such a good point, and I really want to explore it, is you already have a community, right? The beard and mustache community, which is massive. It's huge, you know what I mean? I know that because the Beard Brand, I've worked with one of their ambassadors, Greg, I don't know what his last name is. Yeah, I worked with him and did a project with him, and it's massive. It's huge. It's a big industry, and there's people that are into growing beards are really, really into it. So for you to be able to naturally just get into making products for that community is so big. And I think that we've all done this. Every leather crafter that I've worked with, if we're out at a family event or we're at a barbecue, there's going to be four or five people that have ideas for us to do. And their ideas are centered around what they enjoy doing. And they're a part of a community around. But if you're not part of that community, you can't like touch that base. You know what I mean? Like you can't really dive into that because you don't know terms and lingo, and you're just a person coming into this group trying to sling your products. You're not going to be well received, but no, and everyone should have something that they're into. I'm very much into like the tattoo culture. I lean into that. That's something that I know. I'm able to talk to tattoo artists because I was one for 15 years, but everyone has that. If you're into import car culture, you can make things for that. If you're into, I don't know, we could spend 20 minutes listing off things, but the people that are listening, the audience, like find out, think about making products for a community that you're already involved in. That's what, and also I want to kind of track back and not let you off the hook. You said that you were buying all of this camera equipment. I would highly, highly recommend you getting on, like setting a time up to go live, it's better to do it now than tomorrow or next week or a year from now, because your numbers are going to grow. And with your number of followers and potential people tuning in, growing, the scarier it gets. So you're always going to have a smaller following today than you are tomorrow. So just set up your phone in the corner and set a timer for 15 minutes and push yourself. You don't even have to engage. I mean, it's always better if you engage. That's the problem with me when I do lives. Like, I want to answer questions the whole time. Otherwise, I'm just talking about nothing. Like, oh, I'm doing this, or, you know, like, just try to engage and realize that those people came to see you. There's nothing really scary, and you're going to stumble and you're going to get nervous. But I'll tell you what, like, how I am where I am now started from me going on a podcast. The host of the podcast challenged me to put myself in front of the camera more. So I did my first live on Instagram. That turned into doing an Instagram live based podcast. And now we're doing a real podcast that are put out on Spotify, Apple Music, like all of these things. So it snowballs. It's scary. It's like any kind of thing. You do it, then it gets less and less and less scary. But if you don't do it,
it's always going to be the scary thing.
Yeah. It's always going to be scary.
No, that's great. And I appreciate you pushing me on that, because and now is the perfect time, because I'm in the process of transitioning my workspace. Like, I when I started, it was literally on an IKEA desk that we had sitting in a room somewhere, and we pulled it down to the living room so I could spend my crafting time around my family, right? And now I'm sitting in a utility closet down in my basement because it got a little bit bigger and a little bit louder. And then over the last 6 months, I convinced my wife to let me have our guest bedroom, right, in the basement. So I've got this guest bedroom with a big ass closet that I can use for storage, and I've got plans. So this year for me has been about planning for next year and getting the things in place for next year. This is not my year of growth. This is my year of learning, preparing, and getting there. Right.
You are such a smart man for being able to realize that. I think people that jump into any kind of craft in there, they're so eager to be massive, but you're setting up the foundation of doing that. And we talk about that all of the time. I think the strategy that I would give to people is the first year, get plugged in with the community as much as you can, get as much, yeah, build the community around you, whether it's potential clients, but your peers. Getting respect amongst your peers is so important the first year or two, because if your clients see that other leathersmiths are engaging in your work, they're going to be like, oh, this guy's legit. Like, there's other people that are really engaging in what he's doing. You're more likely to be able to, one, charge more, and two, people, it lends credibility and it opens up opportunities for sponsorships or brand deals in the future, because you're known within the community. And also, it provides a lot of resources. When you're stuck on something, you're able to ask your friends, hey, I need to resource this kind of hardware, where do I go? Or, hey, I'm thinking about buying a new knife, what have you found works well for you? I mean, there's a million different things like that. And yeah, it's crazy. And I think that it's really smart that you do that. And it also puts realistic expectations on yourself, so you're not beating yourself because you're not meeting this monthly quota of products that you've sold or whatever it is.
Yeah, my goal for this year is to sell one thing every month. That's my goal, whether it's a, you know, a $20 comb sheath or a $600 backpack or whatever it is. I was profitable last year. I'm not going to be profitable this year. I know that for a fact, because I've made some pretty significant tool investments this year. You know, like, this is my year where I'm bringing an industrial laser into my workflow. Like, I don't know why. Like, it was one of those things where I was just like, okay, well, you know, the people that I was engaging with outside of the retail side, so more of a wholesale thing, people were asking, hey, can you do patches? Can you do like all these small batch iterative things? And it's like, well, I know I can, but I can't do them. I can't do them in a cost effective way. But I had enough people asking me about it that I was like, well, shit. I've wanted to play around. Like I wanted a laser to play around with, but
this, you need an excuse.
This might be the thing, right? So, you know,
you had to be able to justify it to yourself and your wife, I'm sure.
Well, that's the beauty, right? So, one of the things my wife and I have done since after our first year of marriage, so we've been married, 12 years now. After our first year of marriage, that first year, it's pretty rough because I was old when we got married and she's significantly younger than me. I've got 9 years on her. And I was very established in my routines and my, you know, in my daily life and how I spent my money, all this other crap. And then getting on the same page around finances was huge for us. So we decided that every month we're going to allocate what we call blow money. You know, here's your allowance. You can spend it on whatever the hell you want. I'm not going to ask any questions. I've got mine. I'm going to spend it on whatever the hell I want. You don't ask me any questions. And I tend to be like a hoarder of my money. Like I will save up and just because there's nothing really that I need or I want or anything like that. So this whole leather crafting venture is floated off of blow money that I've been hoarding for a long period of time. So like, this is all my mad cash. So I didn't have to justify this thing. And in my mind, I'm sitting here going, this is a lot of money, but shit, it's going to be fun. And it's something new to learn about too. Like there's so much, you know, like I haven't done any, you know, software design stuff since I was in high school, back when Photoshop was on like version 1.5, you know,
so you're showing your age, Dave.
I'm not a youngster. That's for sure. But yeah, so I'm really happy to be bringing that into my workflow. And that's part of moving into this bigger space and kind of figuring out, okay, what do I want this thing to be? So I'm making all of these investments for that.
That's so awesome. And that strategy of how you handle your finances, you said that was after year one, you're going on 12, 13 years now. So something obviously clicked for you. And I think that there's like we should all give a huge shout out to our partners. We have a lot of females on here because they, whether they're in the shop with you every single day or they're not, there's such a huge, huge amount of support that they do that just goes on. Letting us follow our passions is a huge support and encourage. They don't have to be like, oh, hey, Dave, hey, Dan, whatever, you know, like what you're making is just so cool. Like it doesn't always come in that form. And this is something I'm realizing from my partner is that her way of supporting is far different than what I expected it to be. I can get showered with praise from people on the internet through TikTok, through whatever, but that's not her role. Even my mother-in-law is like, I show my mother-in-law the projects when they're done before her because I need a boost of confidence for my mother-in-law. They'll be like, oh my God, this is so cool. Then I show my wife and she's like, oh, nice. Okay. And I'm like, I just spent 3 days doing a portrait of someone, you know, like this looks photorealistic. And it's like, ah, okay. And I'm like, but at the same time, she's allowing me to not go to work, a real job. That's massive. So it's so cool. Well, Dave, we're going to take a really quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about a lot of cool things. One of them being how we collaborate with our clients and how that's changed for both you and I. And hopefully we'll be able to share a little bit of knowledge and the successes and non-successes, the failures that we've had with that. So we'll be right back from the break in just a second. Welcome back to the Wake and Make podcast. Today's guest is Dave Smith, and we've been having a great conversation so far talking about what it is that we do, the struggles that we have, and the support that we have from our partners, which is awesome. We absolutely love it. Moving on to the next kind of topic that we want to discuss was how we collaborate with our clients, whether that's doing custom jobs for them, you know, just getting feedback from them so that it is a unique product for each person that we deal with. What are some of the strategies that you have, Dave? And then I'll go into some of the things that have worked for me, and more than anything, the things that have changed for me.
Yeah, I think most of the things that I do are one-off made orders. So somebody will hear about me, will come to me with an idea of, hey, I want a purse or I want a wallet. And for me, that opens up a list of questions. How do you envision using this thing? What sizes do you need? What, you know, is this going to be an everyday thing or a special occasion thing? And I don't even get to leather, thread color, hardware, you know, so until after we go through this process of identifying who they are as a person and how do they want to use the piece.
Right.
And that's, you know, I think it's just fun to get to know people. And because I'm an introvert, I have a hard time kind of chit-chatting small talk. But once I get going, I get going, right? As you're probably experiencing. But yeah, but that's a way, that's the icebreaker for me, is this kind of format of questions that I have just to get to know the individual. And then once we establish that, it's okay, well, you know, let's talk about materials, let's talk about finishes and things like that. And the challenge with that is it seems like that's the point where everybody just gets overwhelmed. There's so much variety and so many things to think about that they just, they're like, oh, I don't know. I trust you. Just do it. And that's where I get caught in the headlights, where I'm just like, oh shit, this person's asking me to make them something based on this way of being, right, for this piece. And then they're saying, here's the money. I trust you to get it done. Make it awesome. And I'm just sitting here going, oh, you know, so that's where the collaborative process for me is. I feel the need to dig in more. And then oftentimes, you know, depending on the person, but most often people are just like, this is where I'm checking out. Like, make it happen.
If you give people too many options, they get overwhelmed. And we need to carry that burden as the craftsman, craftswoman, leathersmith, whatever it is, we need to carry that burden because that's our profession. That's what we're selling. They want to be like, ooh, I saw something else that you made and it sparked interest in this. Can you do this slightly different? They're going to tell you what they want within that first kind of initial conversation. You can ask about different leathers that they want to use, different thread colors, all of those different things. But then again, they trust you. They came to you because they saw the products that you made and they trust you. What I found has changed for me, and I think that this is very, very important. When you're early in leathercraft, take every project that people are willing to pay you for. You may not get paid what you're worth, but those one-off projects where you have to design the pattern, you have to do a proof of contact, proof of concept. Then you got to prototype it. Then you got to make something worth the money that they spent on you. Those first three steps take way more time than any of the other ones. And you're not really actually getting paid for that. And it can be very, very frustrating when for the sake of basic math, you charge somebody $100 to do something for a custom project because that's what the end product you guys have agreed is worth it to them and to you to do it. That's business, right? Like, someone's got to be willing to spend the amount of dollars and you got to be able to do what they're asking for a certain amount of dollars. But not getting paid for those three steps before, maybe it takes you 2 days to make the $100 product, but it takes you at least a day to 2 days to do each one of the the steps before, and now you're in 5 days, you're getting paid $20 a day to do a project. That's rough. That's really rough.
It is real rough. And I, you know, for my custom pieces, I have a flag drop fee. Mm-hmm. So I'm like a cab, like I'm going to charge you. And it's not much. Like I call myself a businessman, but this is also just support at this point in my life. It's not my main source of income, right? So I'm very fortunate in that. So this is a hobby for me, and it's a self-perpetuating hobby for me. So I'll charge a flag drop fee based upon, okay, you know, this is simple or complex. If it's simple, it's X. If it's complex, it's Y. And regardless of if we move forward with the project or not, I'm getting that money, right? That's, and it's not much. It's but it's showing some commitment from the buyer side, right? Most of that style work that I'm doing is taking me an hour or two of design time. I mean, we're talking like comb sheets. And it's to your point earlier, it's amazing how big and how invested the beard community is in their stuff. They spend money on their stuff, and it's great, and I love them, and these guys are awesome, right? And I've got people, like I've made comb sheets for probably 6 or 7 different brands now, and all of them were because somebody started off with one of my sheets that I made for the beard brand community that I'm part of, and then they're like, hey, I've got this Kent comb, or I've got this, you know, Detroit grooming comb, or I've got this other thing that right. This dude made me. It's and then for like the other made to order pieces, if it's a bag, like I'm still new enough in the craft that I rely on pattern makers often.
Often,
very often. And if it weren't for them, if it weren't for like Tony C's of the world, or the, you know, the Patrick Koo's, like Creative All, Diesel Punk, like I wouldn't have gotten into this the way that I've gotten into this. Like those guys are amazing. The shit that they put out.
I love it. I think, we're very different in that sense. I've gotten different patterns, and unless they're like acrylic patterns that I can like trace, but like to print something off the internet and do that whole process, it's like putting a puzzle together. It just, for some reason, I tried a few of them and I'm like, this just doesn't work for me. So I'll look at people's stuff that I admire. And because I come from the tattoo world, I've always been instilled in like, don't copy people's work, change it at least 20%, make it your own. And I knew from day one, the day that I sold my first product to a coworker, when I was obviously still, I still had a normal job. I knew that it was important for me to have my own style. Like I wanted people to recognize the stuff that I did right out of the gate. So I still have people that like, when I make something, they're like, oh, where can I get that pattern? And it takes me a second. I'm like, do you want to buy the pattern from me? I don't get what you're saying. Like, it doesn't register to me right out of the gate. And then I'm like, oh, I made this pattern up. Like, I watched one or two videos. Like, I've been working on sandals going into summer. I see something that people, I watch two videos on YouTube, and my brain goes, okay, I like one or two things from this one or two things from this one. I can improve it one or two ways this way. Then I just go into my shop and draw my own patterns out of, you know, cardstock paper, put it together like it's leather, then make a proof of concept, then I do it. And as soon as this is kind of the late stage process, or the more recent process of how I run my operations. As soon as I went from hobby status to working into making this a full-time business, I knew I couldn't do custom work because there's no money in custom work. It's a hobbyist game to do custom stuff, which, again, going back to what I was saying, I encourage everyone to do custom work at the beginning because it teaches you so much skills, and it teaches you how to research answers for the things that you need to do. But going from custom stuff into putting out collections and building a catalog, I knew that I needed to work off the same patterns, But the custom work I do is the tooling and painting. That's where I work. And then the stuff that I add to my collections, I call it Selfish Sundays. And it's when I come out into the shop and make something for myself or a loved one. And I post the story of how I made it through the whole process. And those are the things that people are always interested in. And if it does well, then I add it to my catalog. And that's how I run my entire program, because I need to get away from, I work 6 days a week on my own stuff. On the seventh day, I don't want to be making stuff for other people. I want to enjoy and learn and put things together. And now I'm to the point where if somebody wants something made, that's where the communication, the heavy communication and the collaboration comes. I get on a Zoom call. I show them the shop. I show them examples of everything, the materials that I can use, the thread colors. Then I sit down and write notes, and we have like a face-to-face conversation. And when you make people feel like, what you were saying was, some people want to check out and they trust you. I can know within 15 minutes what kind of person that I'm talking to. If they want to know every single step of the way, they want to be tagged in every photo that I post, I know right away. And I serve them. They're my clients. I serve them in what they want within reason. You know, like,
yeah. And that's something I never thought about, was actually doing the collaborative process over a Zoom meeting.
It's important.
I've always been doing it. I've been doing it either, you know, if they're local, I'll do it in person, but you know, 90% of my clientele are not local, and I've been just doing it through email. That's huge. I never even crossed my mind.
It's changed every, well, this year I raised my prices. And I knew if I was going to raise my prices, I had to raise the value, and not just the products that I made, but raise the value in the experience that they get. So that was the thing that I did. I take calls from every single person, even if they're in New Zealand or in Japan or whatever it is. Like, if it comes down to having a translator for someone where I can speak to almost anyone, even if we don't know each other's languages. Like, I'm pretty good at like body language, and that's where Zoom comes into play, or any kind of like, you know, web-based communication system. And these people are spending a lot of money, whether you're at my level or you're at your level, a hobbyist or somebody that does this full time. Leather goods are a luxury product. There's no one can convince me different, just based off the material cost and the quality of the materials we use. There's no way of making, there's no way that it's not. So if you can portray that to your customers, like, hey, you're buying a luxury product, they expect luxury service with that product. So that's something that has been massive, and it leads into great friendships. And I'll tell you about one that's recent. So I did this like custom guitar strap for a gentleman, and it had six portraits on it of all of his favorite guitar players. And that was a custom project that I was willing to take on, because he seeked me out for a specific thing that I do, which is doing portraits. And there was so much collaboration in that, and so much communication. He had to order specific things to be added to it, and we're going back and forth. And it turns out he's been one of the people that I'm close to. He's an older black man. He's a federal judge in Washington, D.C. At this point, we have hour to 2 hour long conversations. 15 minutes of it is about the project he's working on. The other 15 minutes is about current events, politics, international, you know, like geopolitics, our predictions, and like, it's so insane. And it's cool. Like, he asked how my wife's doing. Like, I know his kids' names. Like, it's developed into like a real friendship. Like,
yeah, no, that's awesome.
It's so cool. And I'm so grateful for those opportunities. And I know when he needs something else made out of leather, he comes to me. Yep. And that's the cool part. And, Yeah, I highly encourage you, Dave, and anyone listening, really spend the time. If you spend the time getting to know the people, you're investing in your business, your hobby, because they'll always come back to you. And you get to make them the best product that they could get. And that's ultimately what we want to do.
Yeah, and create that experience, right? For me, or from my perspective, it's about their experience and getting this thing, right? Like, that's kind of my tagline, is crafting items that inspire. And it's about taking this idea, want, whatever, from the customer's perspective, and then and creating a tangible product and the experience of going from ideation to I've got this thing that is heirloom, right?
Right. And that's the difference, I think, between buying something from a big box store where you're never going to know the designer, the CEO, or even the manager of the JCPenney's or Tilly's that you bought that at. Like, there's no personal connection. But when you're ordering a bespoke product from somebody, to have that engagement with the person that's making it with their hands, it changes things when it gets delivered and your packaging is nice and everything looks good, knowing that, like, the person I was talking to, their hands made this. When you touch it, it changes things. It's like when you eat a good home cooked meal and it's just delicious, and you know, grandma's like, oh, my special ingredients love. That's kind of the same thing in what it is that we're making.
Well, and you know, selfishly, it's so gratifying when, like, I remember somebody, I gave them or sold them a product, and they were looking at it and they're like, so what machines do you use? And I was able to just go, you know, stick my hands up and say, these are my machines. These are my hands. They're the machines that made this product for you. And just kind of the look of, I don't know, amazement, awe, whatever, because it, you know, how often anymore do you get something that's handmade? And, you know, I know there's the debate around what equals handmade and what's not, right? But, that's always the debate.
My whole theory has totally changed around that. When I first started, I was like, if I can't put these tools on my backpack and go out in the forest and make something, then it's not handmade. To the point now where my hands are filled with blisters from hand sewing, I'm like, no, it's still handmade when you use a sewing machine. It's still handmade. Like, whatever gets you to the final project or the final product, like, people use sewing machines. People use hydraulic presses to click out their clicker dies. Like, there's a lot of, like, machinery that we have. If you can afford it, use it. Like, I've totally changed my perspective on that. And it changes the longer that I do it. Like, even with lasers, like, I was like, man, I would never use, and I don't, me personally, because the work that I do, I'd rather use, like, a die and punch out dies because of what happens on the edges. But there's a lot of people that I respect. Yourself, you're getting a laser. Like, I know the quality of work that you do. Ryan from Little King's Goods uses a laser for a lot of things. It's still handmade. Like, your hands are touching it.
Yeah, and I haven't decided exactly how I'm going to incorporate. So am I going to be cutting it out? Am I going to be cutting leather? Am I going to be, you know, just engraving leather? But in my head, the main impetus for it was to be able to make Delrin stamps, to, you know, to do these things, like create acrylic patterns, stuff like that. And have I contemplated cutting? Oh, absolutely. You know, because boy, would that be a game changer, especially on small batch, you know, small batches. You know, I can scale that way. So yeah,
I think it's coasters, all of those kind of things. Yeah, it totally makes sense. And that, especially if you do a lot of commercial work. Like, I just don't do a lot of commercial work. I need to. And when we get back from vacation, I'm going to drive around to the businesses, the tattoo shops, the bars, and show them work that I've done and being like, hey, I'm right down the street. Like, I'm local. Let's put together a collaboration. When you use that word, it gives whoever is going to be working with you a lot of freedom to give you feedback. And it makes them feel more involved in the project that you're doing.
Yep, 100%.
I wanted to ask you, prior to this, we had been talking and you shared an awesome quote with me that really inspired me. And I think it obviously inspired you, something that your friend shared with you. Do you mind sharing that with me again, as well as with the audience, and how it shaped you, Dave, to be where you're at now?
Yeah, sure. So two lifetimes ago, I lived up in the Canadian Rockies, and in a town of 35 people.
Holy crap. These,
yeah, it was small, right? It was a ex or a former coal mining town, and that was the permanent residency.
I thought you were going to say it was a former cult. And I was like, whoa.
No, it was a coal mining town, kind of in between Calgary and Banff. Actually, Edmonton and Banff, but whatever. So it was my buddy Scott. And I won't get into how I met Scott. It was really kind of a funny story. But he and I were good friends. And we were out and he worked for the Department of Transportation up in Canada. And one day we were looking at this road grader and he's like, can you drive a road grader? I was like, no, I can't drive a road grader. I've never driven something that complex. You know, I've just kind of messed around with other machinery. And he's like, wait a minute. He said, I asked you, can you drive a road grader? If somebody ever asks you if you can do something, say yes, because 90% of the time, especially when it comes to shit like this, you flip down the visor and the instructions are right there.
Yeah.
There's always an instruction manual, right? So if somebody asks you if you can do something, yeah, you can do anything you want. You just got to put in the work and the research and figure it out, right?
That's such a great metaphor to what it is that we do, because we can research it. There's stock and barrel photos. There's a diesel punk video. You know, all of these different videos. All of the stuff to research it. We all started there. It may not look as pristine as theirs, or where yours is going to look 6 months, but you can do it. And if someone's willing to pay you to do something and you want to do it, do it. Like,
yeah, 100%.
It's the same way. And I want to double back. You can do Instagram Live, right?
Oh man.
I'm challenging
after challenge
you.
After challenge.
We're Fair friends. Enough. I got to push Fair you, enough. You know?
you and my buddy Marshall, he's always on the Instagram Live. He's a chef/motivational speaker, man. He's always pushing me. I've known him for eons, since like
what's his name?
Six. Marshall O'Brien, Chef Marshall.
I wonder if I follow him. I follow a couple chefs.
Yeah, he's local to Minneapolis, but he's done a lot of stuff on the, like, he does like weekly news spots and some other stuff, but he's got some, he calls them wisdom nuggets or something like that, wisdom jewels. But yeah,
there's always a weird name for something when you're a motivational speaker.
He's an amazing personality. Like, he is just always, he's so full of energy and so positive and so mindful. Like, he's since we knew each other back in middle school, he's been that way. But he's pushing me too. He's the one who was like, he reached out to me the other day in my DMs and was like, hey, do you journal or track or vlog or anything about your process and like your journey, right? He's all about the journey. So he's like, you know, have you thought about doing this? Or have you thought about teaching? And I was like, no, I'm not a teacher, right? Like, I know your feelings on that, because I've listened to a couple of your podcasts, right? You know, just teaching, you know, helps you grow. But
it's the fastest way to learn.
Yep. And I agree with that sentiment. And I think that might take some of the joy away for me. I don't know. Maybe I'll try it someday. But right now, that would be something that I think would detract from my experience. And
That's super valuable that you say that, because just because I or your friend or whatever say, hey, this is one way you could do it, if you know you don't want to do it, then there's no joy in it, right? Like, if you want to do it, but you're nervous about it, then what we're doing and encouraging you is a good thing. But you're one, I know enough about you to know that you're not going to do something that you don't want to because someone tells you to do it. Like, you're just not, you don't have that kind of like passive soul, where if it was something where you're like, man, I really like to get into this or get into that, like, I would love, you know, like if you were to tell me like, oh yeah, you know, like I've invested and I've been looking at things to buy, like buying camera gear, like a camera setup that would overlook my desk while I'm doing stuff, then I would encourage you to get in front of a camera, you know?
Yep, totally makes sense.
You literally just said that before. So that's why
I set myself up. You can dig into that one all you want. Yeah, that's cool.
I totally love it, man. And it's funny. There's a lot of things that I wanted to do, but I was scared to do. Even going on the first podcast that I ever did, to then doing an Instagram live, to then really investing into making short form videos that really, really took off on TikTok. Like, I got TikTok because I thought it was going to be outlawed in the US. Then I just watched TikToks and I thought it was corny and it was just for young kids doing dance videos, which I have no interest in. And then I realized this is pretty cool. And then I put up screenshot, like not screenshots, but like whatever, just photos in there. Like, I forget the word of it, but or like clips show, I don't know, whatever. Doesn't matter. It was just photos that I put into like a video format. Then I started making videos and they did really well. And now that's my major platform. But I never thought that that's what I would do. I wanted to. Then I just getting over your fear, or getting over my fear and pushing myself, has led me into a lot of good situations.
Yeah. And that social media, TikTok, all that fun stuff. I messed that up 100%. Like, my wife and my daughter, I have a teenage daughter, they're going to wind up being my social media account managers at some point. Cause I remember I tried to comment on some or share somebody's story or add to a thing. And I put all this text and it like wound up covering up the photo. And like, I got to spend some time on that, but that's, you know, I'm an old man.
I think that like, I look through your Instagram prior to coming on here, like I do with everyone, because I want to be familiar and kind of get, you know, whatever, what I've, I'll give a couple positive things, and then also some things where I think that you could improve. The positive thing is that you have a separate business account. I see a lot of people that will, especially new into the game, that don't think they're ready to have a business, you know, a business account that's solely for whatever it is that they're doing. A lot of people will just continue their family account, and it will still have photos of their what they ate, or them partying, or their family, their wife, their kids, and then sprinkled in is the products that they make, which is super misleading. I think you knowing not to do that is super crucial. Like, this is my brand, I'm posting things, and then sprinkling in a little bit of your family and your real life to let people know who you are is super crucial. One thing that I would suggest, which is hard because Instagram specifically is moving away from photos into videos. And I don't know if you're quite wanting to do videos yet, but in the meantime, some of the things that I always recommend to people is don't take your photos on your self-healing cutting mat with the whole grid patterns, or on your bench with all of your, like, what I always say is your Instagram is your modern day catalog. So make it look like you've put together a pamphlet of your catalog and people are looking through the photos on there. And you can get a light box for $25 on Amazon, and it's a huge invest. It's one of the cheapest but best investments, because if people see that you put the effort into taking a good quality photo, then it makes your product look as good as it should. Where I think taking those work for those progress photos on your cutting mat and putting it into your story and building a story, which I've been putting a lot more effort into. When I start in the morning, I'll take a shot, and then hour or two later, I'll take a shot, or the next step in the process that I'm doing, take a quick shot. I still edit those really quickly. I make darks and put in, you know, it takes me 30 seconds to edit that video. Then I just put it up. If I'm using certain brands' tools, I'll tag them in it. And then it makes it so easy for them to share that in their stories. And once you get into those stories, especially at this beginning, like foundation stage that you're doing a great job with, Dave, your peers are going to see that in Tandy, Weaver, Buckle Guy, all of these different companies that we use all of the time, or whatever leather company, they see it in there and they're like, oh, who's this guy? Let me check out his work. And then they see your work, which looks great. And they're like, oh, I'm going to follow him. And then it kind of just snowballs, and you're able to build up that base of your peers and get into the DMs with them and like, hey, just want to introduce myself, you know, this and that. And then you build that community around what it is that you're doing. The first year, that through my experience and the people that I talk to, and I'll ask you this too, I'll leave it as a question. In my experience, the first year I was selling to friends and family and trying to build up a fan base. I didn't have many random people buying from me. After that first year, none of my friends and family bought anything from me because they were just mostly interested in supporting me, kind of blindly supporting me. And then if you don't build up that fan base in that first year, 2 years, whatever your goals and your strategy is, your sales will drop off tremendously because your friends and family can't afford to buy more stuff from you. The people that are going to already did.
Yep. Yeah. And I agree with that. My first year was actually random. My first year was totally random. And 90% of the shit I sold my first year were masks. Like plague doctor masks. I sold a face hugger mask, just like random stuff that was super fun to make, super obscure, and people loved it. And that's actually why I became a business. One of my neighbors, who he and his husband walked past our house every day, he ordered these plague doctor masks from me because he saw me out on my front porch sewing one up one morning. And he got two of them. And then he's the one who said, so are you going to start a business with us or what? I said, no, it's, you know, no way. And he's like, well, you should. And then he just walked away. And that was it. He's like, you should start a business. Ooh, peace out. And the second year was the beard community kind of rallying around what I had going on. And then towards the end of last year, that's where the friends and family came in. Because, yeah, so I had a very different experience. You know, I guess, let me take it back a step. I did get a couple of people because I put out on my family Facebook, hey, here's something I'm doing. So I did have a couple of people, you know, order purses or bags and things like that right out of the gate. But then that all of the rest of that happened. And then towards the end of last year is when I started experimenting with other stuff. So, you know, a simple tote bag. Well, that took off. I, you know, somebody from my work was retiring, so the company I work for commissioned me to do this leather backpack, you know, and because she's traveling. So, and so like all this weird, my progression has been kind of sporadic and different, and that's been okay. And where I'm at right now, you know, this is year two, like my second full year, because I had a half year, a full year. This is my second full year. You know, this is me figuring out exactly what you were talking about. How to design and make my own collection. What do I want to do? What direction do I want to take this? Right. Because, you know, with a name like Sternbeard, you know, as a brand, you would think you're kind of limited in who your clientele is, which there's a funny story behind Sternbeard, but who I'm finding out is actually buying stuff for me, ladies' purses, tote bags, handbags. It's like, well, you know, and like, what do I do with that? You know, because I've got these two very different markets going on, and the things that I enjoy doing are the bags. The things that are more on brand are the men's grooming.
That, yeah, and it's so funny that you say that, because sometimes the things that I enjoy the least become the most popular items, and I do my best to then, this is a trick, don't post them on your social media. If you do a project that you're not really that happy about, don't post it anywhere, because then you'll get a flood of people that want that specific thing. And if you truly are like not looking forward to waking up in the morning to get that done, or coming home from work to get that done, don't do it anymore, because that's no matter it takes, what
it's level a joy stealer, right?
Yeah, no matter what level you're at in this game, if you're doing things that you dislike, you're going to have resentment towards the craft, and it's going to take the steam out of, you know, you take your steam out on the projects you do enjoy. And I really, really highly recommend people, this is what's helped me through burnout. Like, I get burnout, so I've been probably 3 weeks into a burnout phase right now, but I'm about to leave on vacation next week, and I know when I halfway through that, I'm going to miss this shop so much, and so it's okay. Like, I'm taking it easy. But the biggest thing that has helped me through burnout is being selfish in making yourself or your spouse or your kid or your uncle something that is completely obscure from what it is that you're making, that you normally make. Like doing the sandal thing, I wanted to make myself a pair of sandals before summer to take on this vacation, right? Like, I wanted something nice, and then it turns into a whole nother it's a whole nother page on my website that quickly. And people are super stoked about this. And for me, I had to pivot going into summer, because that's my slow season is summer. And you got to just work. And sometimes those things that you make for yourself that you enjoy making, they take off, and you got to utilize it. Hey, Dave, so real quick, not real quick, let's get into it. What does the next year look like you? We've been talking a lot about the phases of your business and how it started, your middle, where you're at now. Paint a picture of what the next year and a half, 2 years look like for you. What are some of the goals that you have, and what do you plan on doing?
Yeah, so like I said, this year is a year of learning and building a better foundation for me. The goal has been that this will be my main gig within 5 years. Like that's my goal. And part of that is right now my day job is a really good one. I've been with this company off and on since 1998. I've left twice, gone back three times, and I don't plan on leaving until either they kick me out or it's time to do my thing, right? It's in the bicycle industry, super low key. It's awesome. My wife's an ICU nurse. So she's just starting her career. Like I said, she's 9 years younger than me. I've been on a trajectory to end my career earlier than most, which has been awesome. It's been a blessing. So the hope is that we get her through her next phase of training, and then she picks up the mantle and I start easing back a little bit. And the most reaffirming thing happened the other day, and it's the first time I've actually heard her say this to somebody else, but she communicated that to one of her friends. She's like, yeah, you know, as soon as I do this, then Dave's going to be doing leathercraft full time. And I've never heard her acknowledge that. And I was like, holy shit. Like, that's awesome. So I felt totally like, I don't know, affirmed in this dream that I have. So what I'm doing now is
one second. Yeah, if you don't mind me interrupting, I'm like biting my tongue the whole time you're explaining this. So
do it.
I'm in that phase. I worked my ass off. I left a really, really good paying job, because my fiance, I call her my wife, because we're as married as you can be without a piece. We're just setting up a time to get the piece of paper, whatever. I just refer to her as my wife at this point. But that exact thing happened. where she has a good paying job. She saved up a bunch of money. This is what we were talking about before, the support of our partners come in different ways. This is something that I've been working through as soon as this last month, where this is a slow season. I'm trying to pivot and try to get some money flow going. And it's hard. Like it's really hard. And not to get too personal about our family business, but she did the same thing and reassured me like, hey, you've taken care of things for so long. Let me do this. She's like, would you do it? And I'm like, not only would I do it, but it would make me happy to do it for you. And she's like, so don't steal that from me. You're being selfish. Let me do this. And it changed things so dramatically. I think as I consider myself pretty progressive minded, and I don't really fall into gender roles within our relationship. Like if something needs to be moved, she's just as quick to lift up something heavy as I am. Like we do whatever it takes to get things done. And so, but the one thing that has been the hardest for me is not being the primary breadwinner within our family. And there is something chauvinistic about that that I don't like. And I don't like to say that I'm not the breadwinner, even though I work so hard. Just right now, the financials of things are quite a bit different. And it's tricky. Like where you seem very like, I envy how you're just like, oh yeah, this is the way it's going to go. And your excitement about it. And I'm like, I should be excited as you. Like it. I can't tell you, Dave, how important it is to hear the way you just described it. And how you described it that is so reassuring to me today, like right now.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I could bring that to you. I'm
so grateful.
Yeah, I can't even really say that it took me a while to get there, because the thought process for me, like that shift, that the traditional role shift, the ability to follow my passion outweighs any stigma, right? Any stink.
That speaks a lot to your confidence, I think.
Yeah, thanks.
It does quite a bit. Now go on. Sorry, I had to interrupt you, but I hope it was worth
That's
it.
That's all right. Because for sure.
It's a big compliment to you, and it's a big thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. The train's a little bit derailed, so I can't remember exactly what I was.
You were talking. you were talking about how you're going to, you're building your foundation right now. I asked you kind of what the next year looks like, and it sounds like, better yet, what is the next 5 years? Like, what, you sound very prepared and like goal oriented. You kind of have a map of where you're going.
In my head. So I haven't done, you know, the traditional, I haven't followed the traditional business rules, right? Like if you know, I know that you're friends with Parker over at Stock and Barrel, right? And you've gone through the first place I ever saw you was on the Start Selling Your Leather Work.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm on that too. I'm just more of a lurker than a participant, but you know, so I don't have a mapped out business plan or a model, right? For me, it's really about gaining the skills, developing the chops to be able to do what I would consider is a higher end leather good, right? Like right now I'm very much an infant in the process. And I want to be able to design my own patterns, to make my own collections, to figure out, you know, what direction or directions am I, you know, what markets am I gonna serve? Like, you know, I have a business background, and I know how to think through those processes and get those things done. I just haven't taken the time to do it. So that's really what this year is for me, is to start developing that. And part of the impetus for that is a couple months ago I had eye surgery, and like I haven't been at workbench in 2 months because I can't see. Like
horrible sucks, and terrifying, right? To me.
Yeah. Like it, well, and as a crafter, it's like, you know, what do you do with that? Like that's my future, right? You know, and just vision in general is a big thing. So you know, I thought it was just going to be, you know, bop into the LASIK center and, you know, oh, I don't have to wear glasses anymore. But what I found out was the reason my vision got so shitty is my corneas were separating. So they're like, hey, you've got something bigger going on. We're going to blast off all of the scar tissue. And, you know, you should be able to see it in 2 weeks. Well, that was almost 3 months ago now. And, you know, up until...
Can you not see like close and far? Like you just simply can't see?
Well, as of today, they gave me some temporary contacts because I had to go on a work trip last week to Colorado. And I said, I need to be able to see to get shit done while I'm out there. So they gave me these temporary contacts. But if I take them out, like... I can see good up close, but I'm looking at the world through my phone to be able to see anything like beyond, see anything with clarity beyond like 20 inches.
That's like, that's maddening.
It, especially when you're told 2 weeks and you agree to the procedure, but then it's 3 months later. So, I'm working through that, but what that challenge or that setback has given me, the silver lining from this one, is it's given me the time to stop, think about what's next, think about, hey, you know, I can start thinking through my workflows, redesigning my work area. I can start learning, you know, the laser design software. I can start thinking about, you know, hey, my product descriptions on my website suck. You know, like my marketing assets are, in my words, garbage, and you know, they could use some improvement, right? So what do I need to do? What are the things that I can start learning? You know, what videos can I watch? Because I can sit and stare at something 12 inches away and take this as my year to do that.
Is doing like writing copy and doing, you know, that being product descriptions, all of that kind of stuff, is that something that you enjoy? Because if it isn't, I have a great resource, something that I use that's very inexpensive.
I would love to hear what that is.
It's Fiverr. I don't know if you've heard of it.
That's how I got my logo.
Yeah, same here. Same here. It's very inexpensive, but I use it for everything. And it's good for me because I write up a very generic description of what it is that I want whoever it is to do. And I just copy and paste that and send it out to 20 people. And I'm good at leathercraft, but I'm a master negotiator. And I'm able to work it to figure out what the turnaround is, how much it will cost, and what is included in that, to the point that I find value in getting that price down and the turnaround higher. The value in spending time doing that always outweighs the amount of money that I save from it. Plus, it's something I enjoy. I love negotiating. It's like some people like arguing. I don't like arguing, but I do. I mean, I guess negotiation is a friendly way of arguing almost. And but I just love it. And I love it it's led into sponsorship deals with different companies and stuff like that. And I just, man, I love it. I love hearing what your plan is and you being able to utilize the time where you're kind of downtrodden in your capability and using it to plan out ahead. I think there's multiple things that I think you're doing, not just planning out ahead, but your excitement to get back into making things is just going to go up so much more. Stepping away from things can be so beneficial.
Oh, for sure. And it just, you know, to your point about going on vacation, you know, like halfway through your vacation, you're going to miss being in the shop, right? Like I'm just giddy. And yeah. Right now, like I've been, you know, Instagram has been dormant for me, but the couple of things that I've posted in those couple months are new tool days, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the downside of not working is then you're like scheming and you're getting stuff, but you're not getting money to pay for the stuff. Right. So it's like, or to repay this stuff. Like that's the one piece that I feel super strong about, both in personal finances and business finances. If you don't have the money, don't get the shit.
We could talk about this for hours, and I love this conversation, and I think it's so valuable to people. This has been my strategy, and this is something that I've learned from my wife, is if I want something new, whatever it is, buy the absolute cheapest version of it, at first to see if it's actually, you know how many knives I've gone through, different versions of knives for cutting leather, and I get the absolute cheapest version, and if I use it for 3 weeks and I still love it, I will skip everything else and go straight to the best version of it. I'm committed to it, and that goes to not just my leather studio space, but everything in life. Like, it's just become, I've become so much more money conscious, owning a business, but also my chick is very much money cautious. Like, she is not impulsive in anything that she buys. She doesn't just go crazy or anything. Everything is thought out, and I'm a better person because of that. And I highly recommend, when it comes to purchasing tools, get the absolute, if it's switching from, a stitching diamond, you know, stitching punches to like hole punch style, go on Amazon, buy the $10 version, then go straight to Cinebrock if it's something that you like. Like, make that jump and save the money, like you said.
I hear you. I just got another new tool today. I just got my single hole Cinebrock punch. I have an 8 and I have a 6 that I pared down to a 2. So my 6 is a 2. And I was like,
to do corners.
Yep. And I was like, I need a 1. There's times when I just need a 1. So I got a 1.
I thought you were one of the guys that just use a single, like the guy from
Diesel Punk.
So time
consuming. It's ridiculous. But he actually did it. Like, the reason I went in on Cinebrock, because I was, you know, they're ridiculously expensive, right?
Stupid expensive.
But he got some and did a tool review and said, this is a game changer for me. And I really thought about it, and I was like, okay, I'm into this now. Like, I'm investing. And I was spending hours and hours and hours with the Amazon single hole punch. I'm like, and then like there'd be that one hole that was slightly off, you know, like by a half a mil or a mil, and you're sitting there going, oh, you know, nobody's going to notice that but me.
And that's worse.
And that's worse. So then I was like, I went all in. I was just like, I'm getting the 6. And then, yeah, I think the 8 hole like was on, I got the 8 hole on sale or something from somewhere. I don't even remember. But those, like, that's a lot of money. And they're 100% worth it if that's your stitching style.
I believe in that product so much that I have 3 complete sets. So I'm thousands of dollars invested in these punches, because after buying my first set, I didn't have to test them anymore. I knew that this was the brand that I was going to use moving forward. So I just got another set. And then I got punches, because I hand sew everything, and a lot of my projects are so big that when your spacing is so small, it takes forever. It takes forever. And I'm hand stitching. And so I'm like, I've seen people use punches and it's an okay look. And then I did a few projects and I'm like, it's still like, it looks really good. Like, I was always worried by using the punches that it wouldn't have that luxury look. It would look a little bit more rugged because of the spacing and how big the thread is. But stitching is what I get compliment, aside from like the carving and painting, the stitching is what I get complimented on the most. So I'm all about the Cinebrocks, and I'm all about the Ritz Tiger thread, and I won't use, no one can convince me to use anything else.
Yeah. That's who I use too, right? Cinebrock, Ritz. And then I do use, for some of the smaller projects I use, or the finer work, I use the Misi.
Another thing that I'll share with you that's very recent that I've been starting to use is, I don't know if this happens to you, but when you're hand stitching for a long time, I get like really bad calluses on the inside of my hands, especially using like 1.2 thread, like the big stuff. And I crank it down, like my hands hurt after stitching. My fingers get real rough. I got a pair of golf gloves, a right hand and a left hand. There's grip on both the pointer and the thumb fingers. And it's just enough protection when you're sewing that It's a game changer, I'm telling you. Like, it's insane. Like, I was so tired of my hands hurting after spending two full days of stitching. My hands killed me, and I'm like, dude, I got to change something. Before that, I was using, like, the rubber finger condoms to give me grips because I don't like using pliers pulling things through. And that worked. Then my hands started killing me, and I'm like, okay, I got to switch this up.
Yeah, I used to be a rock climber, so I just used paper tape or cloth tape around my fingers. But then what I decided after that was maybe I'm pulling too hard.
That too. So
I changed my mindset around my thread tension, and that changed. Like I still have my calluses, right? But I stopped cutting through them. Right. Cause that's the painful part is when you're putting that tension on, especially when you're talking thick leather. So I'm assuming like with your sandals, you're probably pulling, you know, a couple of layers of pretty thick leather.
Oh yeah. It's 8 to 10 and there's 3 layers of that.
So. Oh geez. Yeah. Yeah. So you're pulling tough just to get it down. But yeah, that's where, when you're getting those cuts, it's worse than a cardboard cut, man. That shit hurts.
It hurts so bad. And yeah, it's one of those things that is a great investment. Another thing too that's helped speed up my process in sewing is I'll go three holes deep before I put any tension on it. Like a little bit taut, but like I'm not cranking it down. Then after the third spacing, then I crank it down. And that speeds up my process so much because instead of having to pull tight every single hole that you do, it gets equally as tight if you go 3 down, then crank it. You save time. Yeah. That's the thing is the moral of this story is you're going to learn every single day. And by you, I mean me and everybody within in general, is there those little things that we learn are as exciting as the big things that we learned at the beginning, because that's what keeps us going.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially once you get to the point where you have all of the best basic tools that you can use. That was such a huge portion of the beginning stages, is like looking for the next tool or trying out this. And then once you kind of have that stuff, you're like, I still need excitement from this craft. And then those little things play a big part. Dave, any final advice for the listeners? Anything that you would like to pass on to people that are tuning in right now?
Is you can do it, right? Just, you know, if anybody asks you if you can, I'm just going to reiterate the advice that was given to me so many years ago. If anybody asks if you can do it, say yes, and then figure out how to do it. If anybody asks you if you know how to do it, but you don't fleece them. Don't lie. Say, no, I don't know how, but I can figure it out. Or if they're the expert, ask them to teach you. Right. That's the big thing is just be open and willing to learn. Like I'm a collector of experiences, right? Like I've done so many different things. I've had the opportunity to do so many different things just because I've been open to the opportunity. So be open to the opportunity. Like I liked helicopters. Like I flew around in helicopters when I lived up in Canada, right? That was a piece of it. And then one day I was like, I think I want to fly helicopters. So then I went and joined the Air Force.
That's like, insane. Well, that's a big thing. That's massive.
At 26 years old, I was like, I'm going to go join the Air Force. I didn't get to learn how to fly helicopters, but I got to learn how to fly like super modified C-130s, like flying them. Like I wound up being in really, but just being open to the opportunity, figuring out what your next dream is, chase it to the extent that you can. Go for it.
I love that. That's such great advice. And I think that's what we promote so much, is don't wait until you have the answers, because you'll never have the answers. It's the experience. That's my takeaway from this conversation with you, Dave, is in as cliche as it sounds, but it's not about the destination. It's about the experience. It's the journey of getting there. And you never know what turns life's going to give you. And you got to be willing to get into the car before you can even see anything at all. You know, you got to kid. Do you mind plugging yourself? Tell people where they can find your work and where they can buy something to help support you.
Sure. So on Facebook, I'm at Sternbeard. Instagram is sternbeard_leatherworks. And then you can get to me two ways on my webpage, sternbeard.com or sternbeardleatherworks.com. And that's about it right now. Like I said, I'm still learning the social side of things. So maybe TikTok's next.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're going to be getting that camera gear. I think that TikTok is the way to go. And whatever the next phase of social media is, it's going to be more video oriented. So whether we love it or hate it, we got to get, unless you can hire a social media manager that lives with you because they got to document everything. It's very, very difficult to avoid that. And I look forward to seeing how your new shop shapes up. I would encourage you just to take snapshots and post it through your stories. Give people that are fans of yours something, some kind of ongoing thing, even if it isn't the products. There's nothing more than that other leathersmiths like to see than someone building up their shop and new tools that come in. Like, and it's easy. There's a lot less pressure to post through your stories than anything else because they disappear.
Do they? See, I don't even know. Like, I don't know the difference between a story and a, like, I got to figure all that stuff out.
Figure it out. Well, yeah, hopefully before this goes live, because I'm going to need you to help me promote it. So that's the way to do it. So watch some videos. You're a YouTube guy. You like watching videos. Just
I do.
Social media 101. And it will help tremendously. So I appreciate this time. I know you're a very busy man. I know this takes effort from you. And I find this conversation very valuable. And I learned a lot from you. And I thank you.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate being here. It was definitely a challenge. And, you know, you called out for somebody new to step in. And for some reason, I felt compelled. So I appreciate the opportunity for sure.
Absolutely. And that was the idea. I want to start bringing in people that are newer to the game, the hobbyists, because I think that there's a lot of the audience that are the hobbyists, whether they've been doing it 6 years, 5 years, and there's different things that can be discussed on in that stage of leathercraft, that things change when you have to pay your bills solely from leathercraft. It's just a different, not in a lot of ways, it's not as fun. It's not as good. And I think bringing that hobbyist side to these conversations invokes our like childish passion for this still, and the excitement that we can all enjoy and remember, and, you know, show gratitude to this craft that for many people has helped with mental health, myself, and just a sense of purpose. So, man, I can't thank you enough, Dave. You are awesome. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate you.
All right, guys, until next week, thank you for tuning in to the Wake and Make podcast. I appreciate you guys. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. Please share this with a friend. If you guys are tuning in every single week, I appreciate you very much. We're doing this for you. So if you can share it with someone else that might find value, I would appreciate that very much. Until next week, we'll see you guys later.
Way back a year ago.